way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3848 of the Survival Podcast. It is a Tuesday, so it is time for a Just Jack show like we usually have on Tuesdays. I do have an announcement today that I'll say for right before we start, though, about how that schedule will begin to change after I return from my planned vacation to Colorado. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to have an old school Joe today, and I'm going to try to maybe, as I tell you where things are going with scheduling going forward, get a little more pre-planned with my schedule. And I think that maybe we need to consciously make an effort to put in, let's say, one old school prepping show per month. And that's what today is going to qualify as, an old school prepping show. We talk about preparedness plenty around here. It is a core principle of lifestyle design. And the show itself has been a lifestyle design podcast since day one. If you go listen to, like, let's say the first week of the show when the audio is absolute crap, and I was just finding my feet, you can already see that, but you'll also hear a very, very common theme of generalized preparedness, disaster preparedness, emergency preparedness. Over the years, as we become more and more developed and content rich across time, and we develop a very educated audience, and we have so much foundational, fundamental how to basically prep content, we pretty much rely on that for some of our new users that are like, but I just want to know how to put together, you know, a bug out bag. Well, if you put bug out bag in the subject or the search bar at the Survival Podcast, you'll find many episodes, some detailing exactly the items that go in a bug out bag. On the other hand, it is the kind of fundamental baseline the show is built on. And as much as it's changed, it's the same but different, man. And we don't want to let that go. And people like to hear about it again, and things change, the recommendations change across time. So today we're going to do that, except instead of a bug out bag or an EDC kit, we're going to be like a VDC, vehicle everyday carry, right? Like, today's episode is actually going to be 20 items that I think belong in your vehicle pretty much all the time. Maybe not everything all the time, but pretty much all the time. This stuff should be assembled, put together, packaging your vehicle. Some of it might be inside a bug out bag. Some of it might not. Some things could end up being EDC. Some things are not. In fact, I want to give a caveat right out of the gate today that as we do this show, it is not an exhaustive list of every single thing that might make sense to keep in your vehicle. And we are also assuming that you do have a bug out bag, and that bug out bag is in your vehicle when appropriate. We're not going to talk about weapons and ammo because that is more of an EDC on the body thing. If you keep extra ammo in your vehicle, that is your decision. That might be in some level of a go bag kit or something like that. So we're not trying to be exhaustive. The other thing is we're not coming at this today from a standpoint of we are preparing our vehicle to go on a cross-country trip where we will be crossing 400 miles of desert and 300 miles of mountain trail. We're going to have a hijack and a winch and, you know, and enough gear to camp for a month without ever going back. You know, no, that's not what we're doing. We're doing what you actually should set your kids' vehicle. If you have teenage kids that are driving, they should have this shit and they should know how to use it all. And so we're going to go through some of the reasons why this is important, and then we're going to go through these 20 items, and I'll give you some final thoughts. So it's going to be a very old-school style episode, the kind I used to do when I was driving down the road in my personal mobile studio, which I haven't said this forever, was a 2006.5 Jetta Diesel TDI, right? Okay, so if you're that far back into the community, that's the kind of thing we're going to do today. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and take care of our two sponsors of the day. And sponsor of the day number one today is KnifeKits.com. KnifeKits.com has been around so long that they were actually here when I used to podcast from a Jetta Diesel TDI 2006.5, right? That's how long they've been around. I signed them as a sponsor in 2009. It is 2026. That says a lot about how loyal they are to this audience and how much they enjoy working with you and how effective advertising on the Survival Podcast actually is, honestly. For anybody to stick around that long is pretty amazing. Knife Kits is a company that does what it says and says what it does right in the name. Everything you need to build a knife from kit form or, you know, more advanced. You can get raw materials. You can get really cool Damascus steel. You can get buffalo horn. You can get mammoth tusks. There's all kinds of things you can do at knifekits.com. But what they're known for is being able to get that basic kit knife that anybody can customize and put together themselves and begin learning the craft of knife making. And I always say this, man, what a great project to do with a son or a daughter or a grandson or granddaughter, niece or nephew. You know, summer's coming. Do you have a kiddo that's going to be, you know, at your place for about a week or something like that? Like I used to go to my grandparents for like 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, some summers when we lived in, you know, kind of two different state type arrangements, stuff like that. Loved going up there. Man, if I would have had a knife that I built with my granddad, who was named Andrew, but everybody called him Biff, do you think I would ever sell it? You could do that. And here's a suggestion, guys. Maybe go ahead and order one to make. Like order like two kits and order one to make with your kit. So you're both making a knife together. That would be cool. But then order a totally different one and put it together all by yourself first. So you kind of know what you're doing. And then maybe you'll be a little bit better of a teacher. And by the time you do your second one, you'll actually probably be pretty good at putting together kit knives. It's not that hard. Check them out today at knifekits.com. Next up today, Biltong USA. That's Anton Van Vuren. He immigrated to the United States quite a few years ago, legally, might I add, from South Africa. And he brought a lot of South African knowledge with him, including making things like Biltong sticks. That's spelled S-T-I-X, Biltong sticks. Drewers, which basically just means dry sausages. And some stuff that's even not from South Africa, like Kalamanazi sausage. Lots of cool stuff with meat. You can learn more at BiltongUSA.com. And Anton also imports some things from South Africa and all over the world that are really cool, including some of the best smoked salt I have ever had in my life. It actually comes from Mexico, and it is awesome. He sent me a big old container of it. It's finally almost empty. And I'm going to have to order some more of that stuff. So check out all the cool stuff at BiltongUSA.com. And Anton is a legit member of this community. He's been to many events. He seldom has time to like hang out for the entire thing. But I don't think I've run an event since he started working with us that he hasn't at least popped in at, which is pretty awesome. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's main topic. And, again, I want to be clear that we're not talking about being able to go off-road for extended periods of time. We're not talking about hooking up a trailer and going, you know, bugging out to the woods. What we're coming at this from today is the reality that people end up stuck and or broke down all the time in all types of weather, in all types of places, in all types of locations. And what do we need to get through that? And I'll also tell you that this list is actually a pared down list from a longer list, because I didn't want this show to be too long today, from a project that we originally did that led to an episode done all the way back in 2018. So what is that? 8 years ago. And it was originally sourced from the community on MeWe, which I think is kind of cool. So a lot of this stuff wasn't originally from me, though it was in my list as well. But it was members of the audience saying, here's things they think we need to have in our vehicles. Some of the stuff I called out of it was less what I just said and more extreme emergencies, extreme examples and things like that, or things that unless you had specific mechanical knowledge, for instance, they wouldn't do you any good. Okay. So I wanted to make this really simple. Now, before I get into this, though, I do have a couple of announcements. Number one, things are going really great from the food episode I did, a week and a half ago, where I talked about different foods, how to cook them, how to cook really great inexpensively. And I also went through a list of some of the things that I ate back when I was a kid growing up with a Ukrainian grandmother and some of the very low-cost ways that she fed a very large family. And I just, during that episode, I didn't have this planned. I got an idea. I'm like, why don't I have people send in emails that talk about the foods you ate when you were a kid, like especially if you grew up 60s, 70s, 80s, and they had this cost-saving meals that every grandma, mom, dad, whatever, knew how to make. But you really loved them even though they were considered like money-saving, scrimping, or niche things, or fun things, or things that excited you, like my grandma's pierogies or her homemade donuts that she made right before Lent started. And I've gotten a bunch of emails, but I'd like to get a bunch more. I'd like to do an episode in the future that's kind of a fun episode where we just kind of crowdsource that information. So that's why I kind of brought up that the list I'm about to give you is crowdsourced. So send me your emails, TSPC food in the subject line. And tell me about, you know, what was the thing that you really loved? Like the classic, you know, is on a snow day when you're home, a grilled cheese sandwich and some tomato soup. Like just so simple, so cheap. But to me, that brings back memories of like you come in, your fingers hurt. It's so cold. You got out of going to school. And now you got this sandwich in this bowl of soup. And you sit down and watch something like, I don't know, Price is Right or something. Anyway, I'd love to hear your stuff like that. My other announcement's more about the show itself and the structure. I have made a decision that I am going to go to a 3-show-a-week schedule. That will primarily be a Just Jack show, a interview show, and an expert council show every week. Right now, Dorothy and I talked about it, but it looks like we're going to do the Monday-Friday thing off, so we have this one continuous weekend, and everything balances nicely throughout the week. And after 18 years, it'll be this June, I think it's appropriate time to take that step back a little bit and focus on some of the other work that I'm doing, including writing these books, putting these courses together and things like that. I can only do so much as one person, and I think that it's time to take that step back. And, you know, with my average show length being probably 90 minutes, you're talking 3-4.5 hours a week of content anyway. So that's probably about as much as I did 5 days a week when I was back in that car we were just talking about. So speaking of the car, why do we need to have this discussion? Why is it the case that it's important for us to think about what we put in our vehicles and to think about, well, what if something goes wrong beyond just being preppers? Right. Most people that listen to this show on one level or another in your life, you are concerned with preparedness, which means you are probably 5 to 10% of the general population. I'm going to tell you, I believe at least 90% of the people just walk around, la, 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 and they don't worry about any problem until the problem comes. They're 100% reactionary instead of being proactive in their daily lives. And that's just the way the world works. But I want to reach even that person. I want you to be thinking about this. Like if you're the prepared spouse and your other spouse isn't, set up both of your vehicles this way, because when the other spouse is there, when they are in reactionary mode, at least there's things there to deal with the situation. And so from that standpoint, I want to start out with this. There's some statistics that I looked up, and these statistics have actually gotten worse since the last time I talked about this subject. If there is such a thing as better or worse, the numbers are bigger. So right now, most people in the United States of America spend an average of 18 hours a week in their vehicle. 18 hours a week in their vehicle. This is going to work, coming home, ferrying kids around, picking stuff up, going shopping. You know, some people have a smaller number. Some people have a much bigger number. Obviously, a cop is in a vehicle all the time. An Uber driver is in a vehicle all the time. If you have a 20-minute commute to work, you're, you know, 40 minutes a day still. Right. So it still really adds up. But the aggregate average is 18 hours a day. That's 12.5% of all the hours in a week. So more than 10% of your life, you're living in a vehicle. If something's going to go wrong, there's a 10% chance it'll happen while you're in your vehicle. And the number's actually higher than that because of, like, you know, mechanical failures, accidents, and just things that go along with driving a car. Next, there are about 6 million accidents a year in the U.S. And about 4 to 6% of all people are involved in some sort of a car accident annually. So if you go out and you look at a room with 100 people in it, if you randomly pull 4 to 6 of them aside, right, that's the number of people every time you look at a group of 100, that's the number of people that will have an accident that year. It might not be the people you pulled, but that just means that it's probably going to happen any sooner or later. I've met very few people in my life who are, you know, more than like, you know, driving 2 years or something. If you're 16, you may not have had an accident yet. But when you talk to people that are like in their 30s and up, inevitably, almost everybody you talk to has had an accident at some point in their life. Fortunately, most of them are little fender benders and shit like that. But, you know, it's happened. And when you talk to people like that, especially if you didn't grow up where, you know, when you turned 16, mom bought you a new car, or your hand-me-down car was 5 years old. If you talk to people that grew up like I did and like many of you did, that, you know, your first car was some 15-year-old piece of shit, and you were just happy to have a car, It is very unusual to talk to an adult today, like a full-grown-ass adult who has never had a vehicle failure strand them somewhere. I know it's happened to me way more than one time. So the point is that we spend a lot of time in our cars. We do have accidents, and things do go wrong, and we do get stuck, period. And the numbers bear that out. The last kind of statistics I'll give you, and this grew from 11.4%. The last time I looked it up in 2018, as you might imagine, people hold on to vehicles longer now. So it is now 12.8 years is the average age of a vehicle on the road in America today. 12.8 years. Passenger cars tend to actually be driven longer, going up into 14 years. Trucks actually tend to come off the road with less years on them in around 11 years of use, like 10.8 or something like that. But aggregate averages, we have, you know, more vehicles than not driving around over a decade old. So they're more prone to problems and failures. And remember, you can maintain your vehicle perfectly. It takes one act of nature or one idiot on the road next to you to disable your vehicle. Okay. And the brand new best made vehicle there is can still just have this wild ass mechanical failure. My point is there is a preponderance of chance that sometime in the next years coming forward, you will in some way end up standing on the side of the road looking at your vehicle and not be able to just get it in and drive. So it might be good to be prepared for that. Additionally, now let's think about it a different way. Shit goes wrong. You need to leave home. How are you going to leave? In your vehicle? Okay. Shit goes wrong at work. You need to try to get home. How are you going to do it? In your vehicle. Okay. You're going to go on vacation and you're not flying in an airplane or taking a train. How are you going to get there? In your vehicle. You're going to a great big event, and while you're there, something goes wrong and you get stuck there for whatever reason. How'd you get there? In your vehicle. You see what I'm saying? Even when there's nothing wrong with the vehicle itself, the vehicle is how we get places. Therefore, it is very likely that wherever we are when there's a problem, the vehicle will be there too. Yeah? And if we all did this, then even if it happened when our vehicle wasn't there, it would be in the vehicle of the other party. It's very seldom the case that you are somewhere that you can't simply walk back to where you came from, and there is no vehicle. This just makes sense. So what should we have? And some of this stuff I think is going to be like duh obvious, but if I didn't put the duh obvious in, if the community didn't put the duh obvious in, then everybody would be like, you're an idiot, you didn't get the duh obvious. So the first thing is a tire kit. When I say tire kit, what I'm talking about, you need a quality jack. Some vehicles come with jacks that are very high quality jacks to lift a car up and change a tire. Some of them come with jacks that I don't know how as a manufacturer you put that in a kit because you are likely to get sued when somebody dies under it. But it's up to you to figure out if that's your case and to get a good jack. I have in both vehicles a small floor jack that looks like the big jacks they use at a shop. It's just a smaller version. It is much more stable, especially when you're on places like rocky areas where you have to pull off the road and you're not on pavement, or you're on pavement in the heat where the blacktop gets soft and it wants to sink in and things like that. So personally, that's what I have. But you also want to make sure you have a good lug wrench. And again, your vehicle usually comes with stuff like this, but it doesn't anymore in a lot of cases. I'll get to that in a second. But some of the lug wrenches that come with vehicles are worse than dog shit. So you need a way to get the lugs off your vehicle. You need to know where your key lug is. If you have a lug on your tires that opens with a key lug wrench. What I mean by that is you'll look, you see all your lug nuts. You just put a regular lug wrench on them or a socket or a pneumatic tool or whatever and take them off. And there'll be one that's oddly shaped and it's got a little ridge thing in it. And you have to put something on it or in there, and then you attach your wrench or your lug nut to that, and that takes that off. That prevents somebody from stealing your wheels and tires is the purpose of that. So if you have that, you need to know where it is. You should have some sort of a compressor, even if it's a small emergency compressor. Sometimes just to be able to get down the road a little bit and get better repairs done, that's a big deal. You should have a plug kit and a spare tire and anything else you need for this. And you need to check your vehicles. If you have a new vehicle, many new vehicles now come with no spare tire. They give you an air compressor. Generally speaking, it's actually a pretty good air compressor, but it ain't a tire. And you should decide whether or not you want to purchase and carry with you an actual spare tire for your vehicle. If you have a vehicle that comes with a spare tire, it's probably what you call a donut. It's a really shitty little tire. Here's my hack for you with this, if you don't just immediately do it. Eventually, if you keep a car long enough, you're going to put new tires on it. Those tires will probably be okay. You're probably not going to wait till, you know, they look like the tires from A Christmas Story, if you remember that, right? Like the way that the kid describes his dad's thing he called tires, right? But you're probably not going to wait till, like, it's that bad. And of your four tires, even with proper maintenance and rotation, one of them's probably going to be a little bit better than the other. When you put a new set of tires, talk to the tire shop or repair shop or wherever about getting a full-size stock, not fancy, wheel for your car and putting one of those tires on it if you have the donut type thing that sucks. That way, if you have to rely on a spare, you're not out there with this little friggin' wheelbarrow tire on your vehicle. That's the approach that we've tended to take, but we just do it right away. But if you wanted to not make a full expenditure out of the gate, you could do that. I think it's really a shame that manufacturers have stopped including spare tires with vehicles. I guess the other side of that is I bet you 60 to 70% of people couldn't change a spare tire. So that's another thing. Knowledge has to go with this stuff. If you're driving a car, you should know how to put a spare tire on a car. You should also understand things like how to use a compressor and a plug kit, or even something like Fix-A-Flat for a temporary repair to get to a true repair station. And in some instances, I don't care how much you know, do not put a spare tire on a vehicle if you are in a dangerous place to do it. Next up, a fuse kit, which just basically means you need to know what kind of fuses your vehicle uses and have a little box full of fuses, like the fuses in your vehicle. And in some instances, they make little pullers that make it easier to pull fuses. You need to figure out where your fuses are, because you can have something go wrong in your vehicle. It won't start, or something, your lights won't work, or whatever it is. And a lot of times, it's nothing but a fuse. You pop a fuse out, you pop a fuse in, assuming there's not a really bad problem that caused the fuse to pop in the first place. You're back on the road. It's that simple. And it doesn't make any sense not to keep fuses for your vehicle in your vehicle. Okay? And you can go to YouTube and learn what all the fuses do, right? If there's not a diagram inside the panel, you could make your own diagram, fold it up, put it in the panel or wherever those fuses are in your glove box, and then when, you know, something like the lights don't work, you know exactly which fuse to pull. Instead of just starting to pull random fuses and checking them all. Because that's what we did when we were kids, because we didn't know any better, because our dads didn't teach us. Well, they did teach us. They said, go figure out what fuse is wrong, and they figured out that's how we would learn, okay? Next, you should have what I would call a cell phone charging kit, okay? And what that means is you should have charging cables, obviously, for all the phones in your family. See, I am cheap. I don't like to upgrade devices. So I have an iPhone, even though I also have an above phone, I have an iPhone still as well that uses a lightning cable. That's how old it is. My wife, because I spoil her, has a much newer phone than me, and hers uses the new USB-C. So that would be a minimum. But honestly, I think you should have, if it can be charged from a USB port, phone or not, you should have a cable or adapter tips or something for every basic form of power cable in your vehicle. They can be put away if they're not the ones you use, but they would be there. You never know what you're going to need to charge. I also think you should have a backup battery in your vehicle. Yes, I know your vehicle can charge, but the backup battery can go with you. It can stay plugged in at all times. You can charge off of it. And then you always have additional reserve power if the vehicle fails. The last thing you want to be is stuck on the side of the road with one bar trying to get a call out while your phone's dying. This prevents that, right? And again, it's also where your vehicle goes, generally you go. So if you need the backup power is there. Next up, child care items and or, depending on your situation, a dog pet kit. Right? You have to leave because the sheriff knocked on your door at 2:00 in the morning, said a forest fire's coming. Let's go. You have a dog. Are you leaving your dog behind? No. Do you have any freaking shit for your dog in your car? You may not have time to put together a doggy evacuation kit on the way out the door. So you should have something. Obviously, those of you with kids probably have stuff for your kids already. But all I'm suggesting is maybe you go ahead and throw together like a vehicle bag that has like a change of clothes for all your kids, you and your spouse, in both vehicles. Older shit you could go ahead and give to Goodwill, but you don't because at least it's there. Again, though, I'm assuming you have bug out bags, okay, and or go bags that could be ad hoc added. But again, is it always in your vehicle? This would be more stuff that you always keep in your vehicle. But the, you know, if your kids are younger, basic things you need to support your kids when you're stuck away from home, including some shit to just keep them busy, right? Busy kids are happy kids. Happy kids are relatively quiet kids. Relatively happy, quiet kids allow you to think instead of dealing with tantrums and screaming, right? Next, you should have a first aid kit. That is a non-negotiable thing, and it should not be a 118-piece, you know, first aid kit that came from Walmart, and of the 118 pieces, 108 of them are Band-Aids of various different sizes. You should have a, and I'm not going to say you need to be able to do surgery in the back of your truck, but you should have a decent, well-equipped first aid kit for the most common injuries that you might have to deal with when you're out and about, including things like tourniquets or quick clot or other things like that. These could be life-saving things to have on you. Vehicle collisions can be minor, and most of them fortunately are, but over 30,000, close to 40,000 people a year die in car wrecks. Many of the people that die do not die on impact. Many of them die from things like hemorrhaging. Hemorrhaging can be stopped with the right equipment. That equipment could save your life. It could save your kid's life. It could save your wife's life. It could save your friend's life. It could save your dog's life. It could save your grandkid's life, or it could save the life of somebody you see in a wreck who you don't even know. So you should have that equipment and the basic life-saving first aid knowledge. Everybody should have that right up here in the head. If you've never taken a good first aid course, please do. Please do. It is a very low-cost form of insurance. In fact, most of you probably live somewhere where you can do it for free. I have seen one comment so far, this one from I'm Your Huckleberry, 76. If I see comment or question in all caps in the chat, I will start it for the end of the show. That is your reminder of that. That's for the people, obviously, live chat. Next up, flashlights. You should have more than one flashlight. I have always a flashlight on me for EDC. That's the Olight that I recommend that I've gone to as my primary EDC. I still like a lot of the Streamlight tools, especially the dual fuel and things like that. But you should have additional flashlights in your vehicle, at least two minimum. The batteries should be stored separately from your lights if possible, or if they're in your lights, you should check them often to make sure they don't corrode on you from sitting in there. Simply using them, turning them on and off, swapping batteries out once in a while will help with that. Of the lights in your vehicle, at least one of them should be some form of hand-free light, a headlight, a clip-on hat light, something like that, because things tend to go wrong at the worst possible time. Have you never noticed that? Like, have you not ever had something go wrong? It wasn't a huge deal, but it was just really you didn't need it. But it was also when you didn't need it now, right? Like, now is not the time where you're like, your initial response is just, of course. How many of you have done that, right? Of course it did. Like, the thing had you, like, it was like not like your life didn't end over it, but it's really going to make you more miserable. And it was already a bad moment for it to happen. Of course it did. We have all been there. And that means that it is very probable that when something goes wrong, it could be dark out. And if you're trying to do shit with your hands and hold a flashlight, that sucks. And there ain't an 80s or 70s kid that hasn't been through the hell of having grandpa, uncle, or dad tell you to hold the flashlight and point it there at the spark plug while they take it out. And then they stick their hand in the way of your light, and then they yell at you and move your hand like it's your fault. We all did that, right? 80s, 70s kids, you guys back me up on it. We all did that, right? When you have a light, you control where you look, the light goes. It is a better system for everybody, including the kids of modern times that we would abuse as old Gen Xers, okay? I almost think kids need to go through that. I think it's a rite of passage a little bit, but in general, it would make more sense to have some sort of a headlight for a lot of different reasons. Water, at least a few gallons. Like, you know, water's heavy, but, you know, my go-to recommendation for water are 2-liter soda bottles and 1-gallon iced tea / apple juice jugs. They're very durable. They're designed to put up with pressure and acid. They're food grade and they're free. Either save your own if you're like me and don't use them, find friends who do and ask them to save some for you. But I would say at least 3 to 4 gallons of water in your vehicle at all times. They can go in the truck, behind the seat in the truck, whatever. Water is life. It's something that is non-negotiable when you need it. And I want you to think about things beyond just drinking water too. Like when it comes to water, like if you are old enough to remember September 11, I'm going to ask you a question. When you were watching that day, when all that shit was going down, and I don't care what you think about who really did it, who was behind it, did they let it happen, did they make it, this is irrelevant to our discussion today. I have my own thoughts on that, and I agree with a lot of your shit. But don't go there right now. Please stay on task, okay? How many times did you see somebody after the buildings had fallen and things had gotten a little bit quiet and everybody was trying to find their way out, and you saw somebody take a bottle of water and pour it on the hands and face of another person so that they could see and feel and function again because their face was clogged with dirt? That is just one example. There are times when literally the only thing that you need to be able to see or function properly is a little bit of water for cleanliness. So it's not even about like wash your hands so you don't get sick. It's about being able to see in a situation like that. So you got to have water with you. Blankets and or tarps, I think, make a lot of sense. I like to carry at least one good tarp. There's so many uses for tarps. And they take up, when they're folded, like a 10x10 tarp takes almost no space. Get the best tarp you can get as far as durability. Blankets, I like to have at least two good full-size blankets, something big enough that a grown person could completely wrap themselves with. That would mean that two people could share one. That means two would cover four people minimum. A lot of times that's necessary, and sometimes it's just comforting. I don't know what the hell it is with kids, especially, I hate saying it this way, but kids these days. I mean, we let people come here sometimes. We let people bring kids to like workshops and all. Not generally the big ones, but sometimes the little small ones that we do like a half day or whatever. And these kids, it's summer. It's summer. It's like 90 degrees outside, and they're in the shop all talking to each other and on their phones texting the person next to them, and they're in blankets. Kids like blankets. Having that is another one of those kind of security things for kids that make them comfortable and calm, at least in some situations and times. And again, they just have tremendous utility for us as well. Road flares and signal lights or other signaling devices. You should have some way, if you're broke down on the side of the road and your vehicle is electronically dead, meaning, you know, say, put your four ways on, and like your vehicle's electronically dead and you push the button, you know what happens? Nothing happens, right? And now you're on the side of the road in the dark and you have no way to let oncoming traffic know, I'm here, don't murder me, please. Especially if it's like a two-lane road and traffic's going in both directions and your vehicle's still somewhat on the road. This sucks. So whether it is electronic devices that use batteries, because some pretty good ones, or actual old-school road flares, cheap lanterns, I don't give a shit. You need some way that people that are coming down that road can know something's wrong up here. Slow down. And it might be slow down. It also might be, hey, help, right? When you can be seen, you're more likely to avail yourself of help. Even if the person that drives by is like, I don't know, it could be sketchy. If enough people drive by and see that, they're at least likely enough to pick up their phone, call 911 and say, hey, there's what appears to be a stranded motorist on the side of Highway 67, the mile marker 105, that they're southbound, right? And help might come instead of like getting run over by an F-350, which is the other alternative when you have no lights, okay? So some sort of road flare, signal light, signaling device. You should have old school map atlas, right? You need to have a paper map in your vehicle at minimum. And I think this is actually a great way to go, by the way, because we're probably not all going to have a map of every major city. The simple kind of Rand McNally, like you buy them in convenience stores even, but don't buy them there because they're cheaper if you don't, like 50 state atlas book, right? Where you open a page and it's like there's Tennessee, there's Texas, whatever. Maybe the big states on two pages, and then maybe you have some blowouts of the major cities. These will at least get you in the general direction of where you need to go if you have electronic failure. There's all kinds of reasons electronics fail. Sometimes we're just in a place where, for whatever reason, we're not going to get signal. Storm events, you can have towers taken down. having a map can get you on the road again in going in the right direction, because if you know not to where you sail, then no port is favorable, right? Very simple. So you should have maps and atlases. And I would say, if you live in a major city, it may not be a terrible idea to also have kind of like the city level map. I don't even know if they make the old Mapscos or the ones that had the, you know, like there was the Mapsco, and then there was the one that was like the knockoff version of the Mapsco. Like you would have the whole city in its individual pages, like a spiral bind where you could lay it flat. That's what we used to use before GPS, kids. When we had like service level jobs, and what we got at the beginning of the day was like five addresses we had to be at. That's what you got. Five addresses. And then you got that, and you figured out where they all were, where you were, what your route was. And then you developed your route through. That's what we used to do. Like those, if you can still get those, the Thomas guys, that might be that. All I know is there was like the Mapsco was the gold standard. And then there was a brand that was like a second tier brand that was like half the price and almost as good, but both of those. Or if you don't get one of those, just the kind of big fold out map of like your metro area. If you travel to another metro area often, like you move between, let's say, Dallas and Austin, I would get one for both, plus the 50-state guide, just because you just don't know. It's cheap. It's super easy insurance. It would take almost no space up in the vehicle. Next, you should have something to do, you know, lashing, tying, et cetera, kit. This is tape, tie wraps, wire, cordage, and Velcro. That's my grouping there. And so tape, 100 mile an hour tape is what I call it. Gorilla tape, I guess, is what the brand name is now. But Gorilla tape is basically what we call the 100 mile an hour tape in the military. And it's just basically really good duct tape is what it is. So I would always have a roll of that in your vehicle. Tie wraps, I'm a big believer in the reusable tie wraps where they have a little tab where you can take them back off. I have a bundle of those in every vehicle. They're probably one of my most used items. I bet I used 12 of them today for tying up plants and training vines in my garden. I actually have out of my garden. Here's an off topic, but kind of a little hack. I should do a video about this, as simple as it is. We had our mailbox hit, and it needed to be put back up, and it's like on a 600-pound concrete column. And so this happened during the ice storm when we were in Vegas. So the guy that hit it actually called us. And he's a good dude, and he came. He had a cherry picker on the back of his truck. He put it back in for us, but that took several weeks, so we had no mailbox. So I run down to Lowe's. I buy the cheapest mailbox, metal mailbox I can get, take a 4x4, mount it to the top of it, and I build a little stand for it, and I set it out there. I even put little sticker numbers on it with my address. So we got mail in there until the guy was able to come and fix the mailbox for us. So I took it back to my, I threw it on my little trailer on the back of my tractor, took it back to my garden, set it up there, and it kind of looks cool, right? It looks like a little cottage or something going on back there with a mailbox. And I keep all my shit in it. Keep all my shit, like my shears. I keep some mule tape in there for training vines. Some basic gardening hand tools, right? A mailbox is a metal cabinet designed to stand out in the weather and keep things dry. So all my stuff's right there, right? So anyway, back to the subject, the tie wraps, those things get used everywhere. I used to have a friend that would say, if you can't fix it with baling wire, duct tape, or tie wraps, it's broke forever, right? And he meant, like, if you can't at least redneck fix it for a little while until you can fix it proper. Some sort of cordage, you know, tarred bank line is great for this. TA-50 cord, aka parachute cord, is good for that as well. But something you can tie with, and some wire. Good old-fashioned baling wire is hard to beat. A spool of, like, stainless steel fencing for electric fences, that'll go forever in usability. I wouldn't keep the whole spool in the car. What you do is you make yourself about a 100-foot piece of it, maybe even a 50-foot piece of it wrapped around like a stick or a bolt or something, and keep the big reel of it in there. I use that shit for everything, too. Next, a notepad and pens and or pencils. Everybody today, what do we do? We open our phone and our notes app, et cetera. And if we keep our hands on, you know, that backup power and all, we probably will be able to. There's times, though, when you just need to be able to write shit down really fast. There's also times like, how are you going to make a note on your phone? I know some of you can, but go into a high stress environment. You need to write something down. You need to make note of something. You're on your phone. Do you kind of see the problem there? Right? Have you ever been in that situation? You're like, you're looking for a pen because even though you have your phone, you're on your phone and your hands are tied up, right? Imagine you didn't have the headlight that I told you to have, and you've got a pen light in your teeth. You're on the phone. You're trying to make pad and paper. And the beautiful thing about a pad and paper is even if your kids are with you, if they're old enough to write, you can be on the phone and say, write this down, and you tell them what to write. Then you have it. It might be something like you got hit by another vehicle and it's hauling ass and you got its plate number or a partial. You want to report that and you have pen and paper in the console. You can write it down really fast. It also allows you to leave information behind. Like if you decide the only smart thing to do right now is abandon my vehicle for whatever reason, we won't get into it. You can leave a note saying what direction you went, what time you left, how many people are with you, any physical injuries you have, and if the police or someone else finds your vehicle, they know where to look for you. You're going to leave your phone behind with a note screen open? You see what I mean? Like, that's another reason to make sure that you have some level of physical writing material in your vehicle at all times. And more than one pen or pencil. Shit breaks. Two is one, one is none. Jumper cables and or a jump pack, and I believe in both. You want a good set of jump cables, long ones, heavy gauge. If you can't afford heavy gauge, heavy copper wire, long, really good quality jumping cables, long, okay, decent quality, cheap, better than zero, okay? Way better than zero. Jump packs allow you to self-rescue. Some people say, why do you need that? Just don't let your battery die. Okay, yeah. Talk to, what's his name, Murphy about that, right? Like, Murphy laughs at humans on a daily basis. I think Murphy, whoever the hell Murphy actually is, and God, just, I think they just, at the end of every day, they just chill out together and watch the giant God screen and laugh at people that thought something wouldn't go wrong, right? Like, there's the old saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. So, good, solid jump pack. Jump packs also let you help others when it's kind of difficult to get your vehicle to where you can jump them. That's why I like very long jumper cables if you have them and super heavy gauge. Remember this about jumper cables. They don't go with your vehicle when you trade them, turn them in, or sell them. So they are effectively, when you buy high quality ones, a once in a lifetime purchase for however many vehicles you own. So if you own two vehicles your whole life, two good sets of jumper cables, that's all you'll, what I mean is two vehicles simultaneously. So however many vehicles, you have three, then you need three sets, right? You might even have a cheap set and the one you don't use very often. And if it's going to go long term, you swap them over or something. I don't know. But if you buy good quality jumper cables, they're going to last a very, 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 very long time for you, especially considering they're not something you use every day. They get put away, they get taken care of. When you use them, roll them back up and put them away, and they will last a long time. Again, jump packs allow you to self-rescue. I remember when I became a believer in jump packs, and there really weren't a lot of them yet. And I was at a Walmart. I had my truck die, and I had a set of jumper cables because I've always been some kind of a prepper. This is before the show. That's how long ago this is. And I think I asked about 14, 15 people if they would jump my truck for me, and I had cables, and it took that many before somebody said yes. And there was a lot of people there. I mean, it was like, ask somebody, ask somebody, ask somebody, ask somebody, ask somebody, ask. Okay, somebody said yes, right? It took 2 minutes to do all that. And, you know, I guess I'm kind of a bigger guy or whatever, and, like, I guarantee you there was no – I asked, like, two women, and then I'm like, I'm not even asking women. I could tell, like, they were afraid I was trying to lure them into my truck and abduct them or something. So have the ability to self-rescue when you can. Don't always depend on the kindness of strangers, which jumper cables will always depend on either you being the kind stranger or finding one. Have them anyway, but don't rely on them solely. Extra food that is vehicle temps stable. So even if you just have like a few Mountain House products or something like that, and if you have something that needs to be heated up, a little camp stove and fuel for it, I mean, we used that one time. We went to like a big speaking event, and it was really kind of over, and I'm kind of like nudging my wife, like, let's go, and she wanted to stay. And so by the time we went to leave and we got to the parking lot, everybody's going. You look at the lie, you go, if we get in our car, start it up, and start heading out of this place now, it's going to be 45 minutes to an hour before we get out of here. And if we don't move at all in 45 minutes to an hour, there'll be no line and we can just leave. Why would we get in the vehicle and sit there at idle moving 2 feet per 2 minutes, right? So we actually just like dropped the tailgate, threw a little camp stove up, and made something to eat. And we sat there and, you know, just had lunch basically until everybody cleared out. Like, there's times that this isn't only for emergencies, but if you can be stuck somewhere, you can be stuck long enough to be hungry. So make sure you have some stuff and some stuff you do not need to prepare. Like that was stuff like we would boil a little water, dump it in the pouch, seal it up, let it cook, and then eat it, right? Like that was fine. We did it because it was fun. But, you know, some, you know, jerky or something that you can just put in your mouth, but you also want something that you're not going to like if it sits in your trunk. When you open it up, it's not melted. It's not ruined. It's not destroyed. And most food, even if it has a good shelf life, if it's kept in a vehicle, the shelf life shortens. So rotate it every once in a while. Next, you should have like a tire billy or some club that isn't a club. In other words, you should have something in your vehicle that will make a good blunt instrument for making somebody conscious into unconscious if the situation arises. But given the state of society and certain legal frameworks and not knowing where you may end up, it should be something that you have a reason for it other than using it as a weapon. A good old school like 3D cell mag light. I can tell you from personal experience, if you hit somebody in the head with a 3D cell mag light, whatever they're doing, they generally stop doing that at least for a moment. Okay. And I don't want to talk about tire thumper. That's what a tire billy is. A tire billy, it looks just like a little club, but that's what it is. What's it for? It's for truck drivers because you have duals, right? Then they tap their tires because they can tell, like, if you have two dualies, one's lost a lot of air, but it's sitting next to the other one holds the vehicle up. You don't see it like you do on a regular vehicle. But how do you explain a tire billy to a cop if you're driving a pickup truck that ain't a dually? Well, sometimes, sir, I tow trailers. Not that you should get that question very often, but it's just good to think about. But something that you could say if you needed to defend yourself, you can defend yourself with. I carry a gun everywhere, all the time, every place you go. Well, then sometimes you're probably doing it illegally. And if you do, that's fine. Do you carry a gun for every person you come into contact with? You might end up in a situation where you might have another person that needs some means of defense, and you don't always want to escalate to the wireless hole puncher right away. Okay, and you don't ever know what might just be within arm's reach when you need it. I'm just saying, I think that is a good thing to have. A stash of hidden cash. This is going to bail you out at times when it's not an emergency at all. You went to the grocery store. You picked up the few things that you went to the grocery store for. You didn't want to go to the grocery store. You were kind of like just like you needed to because somebody asked you to. And so you hauled ass out of the house just to go run and grab it and come back. And when you get to the self-checkout thing and you're about to start ringing up your groceries or to the regular checkout place, you put your hand down and there is no wallet. You either are going all the way back home and not coming back to the store empty-handed, going back home and getting your method of payment and going back to the store because you had to do it because you were appeasing somebody or needed to for another reason. That's it. Like those are your options. Unless you have a few $100 in cash stowed away hidden in your vehicle somewhere, and then you just leave your shit to the side. You go outside, pick up the cash, come in, pay for everything, replenish the cash after that, and you still have it. I'm not even going to go into the emergency reasoning. I'm going to star that one for later. That's a good one. Into the emergency reasoning as to why you might need cash. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. You know, sometimes electronics fail and you need to be able to buy something. I was in New York City. God, what year was that? I don't remember if it was before or after 9/11. I think it was before, but it might. There was a huge blackout that hit the northeastern United States in the early 2000s. And back then I was a regional sales manager, actually a regional sales VP, and I got stuck in the city during the power outage. There was no sense in trying to drive out. My car was valet parked in a parking garage, and the last thing I wanted to do was fight traffic. The hotel was open and on backup power, and the little bar at the bottom of the hotel had outdoor seating and was happy to serve you a drink for cash. No credit card machines working. Sorry, whoops. So I plumped down at the table and watched the mass exodus and drank about three beers and went up to my room and went to bed because I had cash on me. You always want to have cash on you. I'm just saying. In your vehicle, make sure you legit hide it somewhere that is hard to find. I could give this away now because I haven't owned this truck for a long time, and it was built in 78, I think. I used to have this old Chevy Custom Deluxe, and it had a perfect hiding spot in it. The entire horn assembly just pulled off, and there was about the size of a deck of cards inside it. You could stuff anything and put right back on. It's almost like those Chevy guys built it for a reason in the 70s. I don't know, but they did, and that was there. But find some place that you can put that where you don't have to worry about somebody finding it. You also may want to do the same thing with some spare keys, including like keys to your house. What if you go somewhere and you lose your keys and you also had your house keys on your key ring and now you can't get in your house when you finally do get home? You're sitting around waiting for a locksmith or whatever. There are ways to hide a key that allows you to enter your vehicle where it would almost be impossible to find. There are ways that if you did it right, if you were telling somebody over a phone where to find it, they might find it difficult to find it. I will leave it to you. I don't want to like say, hey, this is where I hide my keys, just in case one of you is a dick. But if you know, wherever they hide the cash, maybe you keep your spare keys that are other than your vehicle, maybe for your other vehicle, maybe for your house, maybe if you have an office, whatever you might need keys for, you know, rapidly when, you know, you wouldn't be able to get in without them. And you could lose a set of keys. You go ahead and you put those there with your cash. And then you stow away some form of way to get into the vehicle that can be gotten from the outside of the vehicle. And I'll leave it at that. I'll just say that even newer vehicles that have like all these use of the key fob and everything, generally there's some way to enter that vehicle without the electronics. For instance, my Challenger looks just like a key fob. There's no key sticking out of it. Our Toyota has a key with a fob on it, like it's integrated. My Jetta had a fob, but it also had like a little, like a switchblade, right? Pushed a button, the key popped out. My Challenger has a little release, and you actually, if you didn't know it was there, you'd never find it. You pull it out and it will unlock the door for you, right? So something at that level might be all you need to get in your vehicle. What I'm saying is some vehicles, you can't start the vehicle, but you can gain entry to the vehicle. Right. You do with that as you see fit and as it applies to your vehicle. Your documentation package should be in your vehicle. If you do not have a documentation package, I have an entire podcast. I did it when the show was in the number like 140 something or something like that. It was a very long time ago about documentation packages. Documentation packages have all the information you need to function in the middle of a disaster. They have all the people that you would want to contact, all the vendors that you would want to contact. They have contact information for hotels that are along evacuation routes. Your documentation package should map out three evacuation routes from your home to other places with three rally points along them so you can meet up with family members and such like that. And it goes on from there. It employs some basic substitution cipher encryption for things like account numbers and stuff like that. Yes, the NSA would be able to figure out, but shitbag Harry, the brace near car, wouldn't know what to do with it. And that way you can function. If you have a proper documentation package and you get to somewhere that your device will work, you can probably get through just about anything, right? As long as you're not dead or severely injured. And then last, trash bags. One of the most utilitarian things you can carry, and I this you keep in a go bag, this you keep in a bug out bag, this you keep in a wilderness kit. This you is the big ass, like 90 gallon, super heavy duty contractor trash bags, at least two of them. The utility of that thing, you can make a poncho out of it. You can make a shelter out of it. You can haul heavy shit with it. You can keep things that need to stay dry, dry with it. You know, there's the utility level of that put together properly. So you have four layers like a sled. You can drag a person across leaves and shit easier than dragging them if you didn't have anything to do. And they'll, you know, as long as you don't go breaking into a sprint or something, they're probably going to be okay. You can also move heavy weight with them that same way. They wouldn't go down a road with it, but, you know, fields, grass, stuff like that. We used to, when we had a deer that was really hard to drag out over like rough terrain and all, we would just basically wrap one of those bags around it and tie it up with those lashing materials, and it would be much easier to drag a deer out. They actually made a more heavy duty kind of tarp version of that that was sold for quite a while. Sportsman's Guide, if you remember that catalog, used to sell it. And it was like, we invented that, right? The idea guy. That was my idea. They ripped me off. No, but I'm just saying, like, contractor trash bags are literally one of the best multi-purpose tools for things it was never intended to do that there is, right? What did the maker of the contractor trash bag build it to do? Take shit that you needed to throw away that was heavy and bulky and might put holes in other bags, and hold it in and throw it away. And it does 100 other things, probably more cost effectively than anything else you could get your hands on. You have trash bags, you have lashing material, tie wraps, stuff like that, and you have a tarp, you have a blanket. You can make yourself mostly comfortable in just about any situation, especially if you have a big metal box to work with as well that we call a car or a truck. So that's my list. Here's some of my final thoughts on this. This is easy to do. This isn't even expensive. Some of the stuff you probably would have to buy if you don't have a good, you know, tire kit. You pick up a plug kit for $10. A compressor, you know, can be really expensive or it can be cheap. And, you know, like a jump pack and jumper cables, those are an expense. But a lot of this stuff is you probably have it and it's just about organization. And if you have a couple vehicles, if you went out, if you're at zero right now and you went out tomorrow and you try to do all this for both vehicles, it could be significantly expensive. Doing this over time, though, is really simple and really inexpensive. You know, get a set of cables for one of your vehicles if you don't have them yet, you know, and then next month do it again. And then maybe get a jump pack for each one for another 2 months. And then, you know, I would start with, you know, the most likely problem you're going to have is a tire. So start there, then move on to like the jump packs. And then the rest of this, you know, and I left something out. I'm seeing right here a basic toolkit. Somehow I skipped that. It was number three on my list. And I went right from fuse kit to cell phone. I just realized that. So a basic, you know, toolkit, like basic hand toolkit, like a socket set like I actually have for today, along with like screwdrivers and wrenches and pliers and vice grips. Like just that alone will do a tremendous amount for you. There is no reason, unless you're Charles who's here, right? Unless you're Humble Mechanic and you actually also have like parts and shit, to have some massive amount of tools in your vehicle. You know, I mean, if you race on the weekends and you have all the, you know, you can work on your race car, that's different. But like the average person driving a Toyota down the road wouldn't know what to do with some of the equipment that I'm sure Charles owns. Okay. But basic hand tools can solve a lot of problems. And remember, the problem's not always your vehicle. The problem could be somebody else's vehicle. The problem could be that you're trying to do something that requires a screwdriver. It may not even be related to a vehicle, and where you are, your vehicle is too. So a toolkit could cost some money. But like the toolkit I'm going to show you today, that's like more than half of what you need. Yeah, like I said, you want to add some open-end wrenches, maybe an adjustable wrench, a pair of pliers, a pair of vice grips, or like Nipix adjustable tool, and it's, you know, a good set of screwdrivers, maybe a wire cutter. There you go, right? Maybe a hammer. Yeah. At that point, you're good to go. This thing's like $50. I'll show it to you in a minute. Right. And you could do a lesser tool, like, but you should have something. But my point is, this isn't expensive. Notepad or pens and pencil, I'm sure you have that already. Spare key, that just means take your spare key and put it somewhere you can find it, you know. Documentation package, that's free. It's just the time to put it together. A tire ability or some other club. Somebody said here, you know, you can have a baseball bat if you have a glove with it. Good point. And you know the best baseball bats for self-defense are not big, long ones. They're like those T-ball bats, right? Because it's a good one-handed melee weapon, little glove, right? You put that on it, you stick that in the trunk. Why do you have this? My grandson, my son, my daughter, whatever, plays T-ball. None of your fucking business, that's why. But don't say that. Say the first thing, right? All right, so anyway, I hope this is a good show for you guys. Let me go ahead and wrap things up. I want to go ahead and see what I have starred here. I think I have like 9 people starred today, but a lot of the same people over and over who did it right. So if you have any comments or questions today and you do not see your name come up, then what you probably want to do is you got last call now to do it again. So I've got questions or comments from I'm Your Huckleberry, Jesse C., The Letty Lou, Hey Hey Alabama, XB Hendrix, Survivalizer, Humble Mechanic. Nobody else. So if you didn't hear your name and you have something to say, last call for alcohol. No, last call for comments and questions. All right. I'm Your Huckleberry. Comment. This is just for the vehicle. There will probably be overlap on your body EDC. That's to be expected. Absolutely said that in the beginning. Like, if you're like, well, you didn't say anything about guns and you missed the beginning of today's show, that's your EDC item. And some of these items will be duplicated, but I tried to avoid over duplication and focus on things that would actually go in your vehicle. Comment, state welcome centers have free state road maps. Good point. They still do that. That's cool. I did not know that. I know they used to do that, but I guess it's been a long time since I've cared about that. So that means if you go into a new state, usually right at the state line, there is some sort of like rest stop state welcome center. Go get a map. Save it. It won't go bad. It doesn't have an expiration date. As long as it doesn't get like soaked in rain, it won't break down and disappear. So when you cross the country, build your map collection. That's great. Jesse says, find some lashing wire easier to work with. Yeah, like baling wire, right? Like I used to always save the baling wire that came with my straw bales for my duck coop. But they went to all string bales now, so they don't have it anymore. But again, the stainless steel wire for electric fencing, you use the aluminum too. The stainless steel just more durable, lasts longer, et cetera, holds up better. That's those very inexpensive and really, really easy to work with and really strong for its size as to its tensile strength. Comment, Androids go straight to camera if you double click the power button. Good to know. Didn't know that. So I don't have. Well, I guess I do, right? But I wonder if it'll do that with the above phone, like Graphene OS in it, instead of the standard OS. I'm not sure. I'll have to check that. Thanks for telling me that. Letty says, comment, batteries will die at 40 below. And I think she said later on, ask me how I know. Yes, batteries will die at 40 below. So you need cold weather preparedness is a whole new level. Maybe I'm not going to do a cold weather vehicle preparedness episode moving into June, especially living in a state where pretty soon hobbits will come and throw rings in my backyard to get rid of them. It's going to be that hot. But maybe as we get into like September-ish and heading toward winter, we'll revisit that. It's been a while since we've done cold weather preparedness. Maybe this year we should do a cold weather preparedness for vehicles and a cold weather preparedness for the home. Because we haven't done either of those in quite a while, and we certainly have had to deal with some. Hey, hey, Alabama says, recommendation for jump packs. All the advertising looks good. Which ones really are? Let me give you a new one this week. Hang tight on that for a recommendation. Let me try to introduce an item of the day this week that fills that niche for you. It's been a long time since I've reviewed one. I have one in mind, but I want to do a proper review, put it out as an item of the day. But in general, most of what is on the market today that it's not the rock bottom of the market is damn solid for these purposes. If you buy one sized to your vehicle, and if you take the time to actually look at Amazon reviews and not be fooled, you can trust Amazon reviews. And one of the things, if this is an Amazon thing in general, if something looks a little sketchy to you, click on the reviewer's name and see what they've reviewed. And when all the reviews look very formulaic and the same, they're paid reviewers. And those are ones you can't trust. And usually it's pretty obvious if you know what to look for. And just by looking for it and finding it a couple times, it becomes really, really obvious. There used to be a site called FakeSpot, and they discontinued it. It doesn't run anymore from what I know. I don't know if there's a good replacement for it, but what FakeSpot did is you dropped in an Amazon link and it analyzed the reviews and it told you what percentage of those it believed to be fictitious, fake, bot driven, paid, shill of, you know, type of thing. It would actually give the rating like a letter grade, like A, B, C, D, F, right? Why is there no E in the grading curve? A, B, C, D, F. Why is it E? F for failure? I know, but it just never made sense to me. But yeah, you can generally do that. But I will bring you one either this week or early next week. XB Hendrix, a baseball bat in your car is okay if you have a ball and mitt as well. That's what we already hit on that one, so I'll let that one go. Survivalizer, comment off topic. I'm tempted to not read it, but we're having a fun show today, so I'll go ahead and read it and we'll see. I just sent you an email about a great guest who would be great on the show. Tell them to fill out the guest form. That's it. That's the whole answer there. All right. I wouldn't even say it's that off topic, but if you want to be on the show, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, click on guests and fill it out. And for those of you that get all arrogant about that and don't think you should have to, because I've heard from several people recently and I've heard from people even like at Nicole's workshop, I talked to this guy, bigger name guy, told him about your show. He said he would do it. I sent him the guest link. He said he wouldn't do it because he didn't think he should have to. You are freaking stupid. Okay, if that is you, you are so stupid. I mean, really. You want me to tell you why you're stupid? Because I'm gonna. I'm not really yelling at anybody here. But oh my God, are you stupid? You're going to be on a podcast. You're going to get exposed to all these people. You're going to get all this name recognition, all this brand recognition. And I have a form that does the following things that you won't fill out. Your name, we need to know who you are. Your email address, so we can book you. Your phone number, so we can clear up any fucking details that we can't get right. All the shit you want listed, like what your Twitter account, your X account is, what your Facebook, all your social media shit that you're not going to bother me with 2 fucking weeks after the interview. Can you add this? Can you add this? And set up questions that let me know what you want to talk about. It doesn't completely control the interview, but it gives you the angle. It puts us on the same sheet of music. Your guest bio that we use to tell the fucking people who you are, and you don't want to do it because you think that's not nice because you're so important. Everybody should hold your hand and do your shit for you. I didn't plan on a Jack rant today, but there you go. And this is what I would like you to do. If you know somebody and you suggest they come on this show, okay, and they give you that fucking answer, I want you to give them a time-stamped link in this video where they can hear me say this, and this is what I'm going to say to that person next. Don't bother. You're not worthy of being on the air because you don't care enough about you to make sure that I can communicate who you are to my community, and then I don't want you because I value my community so damn much. I religiously guard my people from charlatans and hucksters and people that only come on for fucking infomercials. And if you won't do that, 99%, that's who you are, and that's why you won't do it. Or you just think you're so important that you shouldn't have to. And I agree, you're so important, you shouldn't have to, and we're not important enough to host your interview. Have a nice life. Anyway, that was mostly for entertainment purposes, but it was also very cathartic. Anyway, Humble Mechanic, I feel summoned. The bag is nice for your old flat tire when you change it, and you don't have to mess up your nice car interior. Laugh out loud. It's not funny. You're right. That's a great point. That's actually a great point. And let me tell you how you do it. You turn the bag inside out. You hold the top of the inside. You stand the tire up. You put your hands through the bag on the top of the tire. You hold it with one hand and you push the bag around it with the other. And even if you're wearing very nice clothes, I can't help you with like getting down and changing it, but you won't from the tire itself get tire crap on you. And tire dirt is nasty, nasty dirt. All right, let's go see if who I upset. Did I upset anybody here? No, vice grips and a 16 to 20 ounce claw hammer. It's not really a question, but yeah, that'd be good in your toolkit for sure. You could get a lot done with that. Did we talk about dash cams from Humble? We did not. We should, but it really wasn't the angle I was coming with here. This was more like when something goes wrong, but I think that's a good addition. And we've never done a show on dash cameras, and I will try to put one together for you because I think that would be a really great idea to do a show on dash cameras because it's there's some good comments there. Anyway, with that, I think I am ready to wrap up. I did mention a toolkit, and yesterday I said that these were throwing a low volume warning, and they still are today. Today it says only three are left in stock. Yesterday it said only four were less in stock, and I don't know exactly how many I sold, but I sold at least 10 as of this morning. So you do with that what you want, but this is a great set from a company called Easley. It's a 64-piece, 3/8-inch socket drive impact set. Because it's designed to be used with impact tools, it's a higher quality than just kind of your base entry-level tool set. That's kind of a hack with these kind of off-brand tools to go right to a higher quality without breaking the bank. This toolkit, though, in fact, this company, I own other tools by them. They are a diamond in the rough, folks. Really. I don't even have a diamond in the rough. They're a diamond hidden under the dirt because they're not even in the rough. These are super high quality tools. Everything I've bought from this company, I have loved the quality of. I haven't had a single tool fail on me yet after buying from these guys for a couple of years. They have some really great options. And this just happens to be kind of the do-it-all socket set that fills that need. I bought this specifically for the reason that we're talking about today. It was purchased specifically for keeping in a vehicle. I am not going to go get, you know, a 250-piece, $400 socket set to keep just behind the truck seat in my truck. That goes in my workshop. That's where that goes. This is like kind of one thing does it all. Again, you just add kind of like I have basically a little tool bag that's from Harbor Freight, of all places, with like, you know, a screwdriver set, open wrench set, various pliers and things like that, hammer, et cetera. And those two, if I need more than that, I probably don't have what I need to do it anyway in a vehicle. Even Charles was saying, hell, I don't, he said, I don't carry like anything but the basics anyway. What are you going to do? I think that's you're a mechanic, fix it. Well, it's got a bad starter motor, so fix it. Give me a starter motor, right? I mean, I can't make a new starter motor. And generally, if a starter motor is bad, I can't pull it off and fix it on the side of the road. I might actually be able to go look at it and maybe I could figure out what's wrong with it and maybe I could fix it if I had a shop to sit in and play with it, but it's not something to do on the side of the road. You know, the belt's broken. Well, if you kept extra belts in your vehicle, we're talking, right? If you don't, it's not going to happen, guys. These new serpentine belts, they have to be very specific belts. You need the right part for the right car. You know, and those are just some typical things that can go wrong. Now, I will give you this little extra hack on that. If you kind of look at a belt and say, you know, it's time to service that belt. Like the maintenance schedule says it, or it just kind of looks a little ratty. And so you replace a belt or a hose or anything like that before it fails. Throw that shit in your kit, in your trunk, or behind your truck seat. Because do I want that old ratty tatty belt on my vehicle long term? No. If I'm on the side of the road and I throw what I thought was a new high quality belt, how happy am I that I didn't throw away that old part? So there's certain things that whenever I replace them as part of maintenance, I always hold on to them because they may be valuable to me in the future. With that, Humble also says, plus it's not 1986. Cars are effing complicated and shit is buried. That's true as well. A lot of stuff, like there's a lot of things I know how to do. And if I was home and I could put my car up on blocks or something, like my Challenger, sure, I get under there and do it if it's underneath the car. I can't fit under there on the side of the road. I can't, no way. I can't fit under there parked on a perfectly smooth, you know, in my shop. My body, my head won't go between the bottom floorboard of the car and the road. I can't fit under there. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that even if you know what to do, it is not realistic to do, and it's not safe to do. Like, again, I want to explain something that I think is really important for men to understand, because women naturally understand this and they don't go, I am she woman, like men go, I am he man. Your vehicle has a flat tire. It is not completely destroyed, though. Like, you can take your little compressor and you can put some air in it, and it may, even if it's leaking pretty fast, you can drive your car somewhere else is safe. But no, you're going to be He-Man, and you're going to replace your tire on the side of the frickin' Dallas North Tollway, where I had to do it one time. That scared the shit out of me. I don't ever want to do that again. Do you know why I did it? Because I didn't have a choice. Well, I could have sat there and waited for AAA. And that I wasn't going to do. It was safe enough to do that. But I'm changing a tire while people are flying past me right near the toll booth. And it was because a piece of angle iron rolled out of a vehicle in front of me, and I ran over it. So it literally shredded the driver's side front tire. Like, there was no way it was going to hold any air. So I had to do it. So I limped on the rim just to get off and fixed it. And by the way, some clown stopped. And like, this is back when we used to throw change in, and he asked me if he said, I accidentally got on. Do I have 50 cents? I literally gave it to him. I'm like, as shitty as my day is, this dude's day must be shitty for him to do this. I had a club not designed to be a club in my hand when he first said my, like, said, hey, it said something to me, you know, like, are you gonna try to jack me here, fool? Right. You know, but ended, and that's what it ended up being. Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed today's show. So I got a couple things on my agenda now for you guys. One is a dash cam show. I think that's been a long time coming, and I should do that for you. So we'll get that done maybe next week. I will try to get this week or possibly next week out to you a recommendation for a jump pack. But I'm going to tell you, next week's going to be a little bit abbreviated, and then we're on vacation, folks. We are going to go on vacation. And, well, maybe that's not next week. I'm not even sure. The days are all folding together for me now. Let's see. No, I got next week, and then the following week, that first week of June, I am out. I don't think we actually leave till later in the week. So there might be a full week next week. It will be the first week of June that will be a bit abbreviated. And that made me feel better. I have more time to get ready to leave than I thought I did. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. Remember, a couple things that I announced today. One, we will be going to a 3-show-a-week format in our programming, starting the week that I get back from Colorado. So that will be the week of June the 15th. And from then on, that's what we're going to do. And two, I really want to do that show for you guys on a community sourced show on foods from your childhood, especially you guys that are 40, 50, 60 years of age in that range. You remember the ways that, you know, your mom, your grandma, whatever, would push two pennies together and make a dime out of them, from a standpoint of food quality. And the things especially that you remember is comfort food growing up. Again, think grilled cheese, tomato soup on a snow day, something like that. Or if you're Ukrainian, pierogies, halloumis, palumpis, etc. Anyway, take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with a great interview. Have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.